Hey gang, are you new to this podcast? Have you subscribed on iTunes, Stitcher, or TuneIn and realized that you can only access the 20 most recent shows on these platforms? Do you want to binge on How Did I Get Here? Well, check out our archives available for free. Simply go to howdidigethere.podbean.com. Look on the right-hand column and our entire catalog is easily accessible by month and year. Go listen to great conversations with artists like Quiet Company, The Blue Bonnets, Dana Falconberry, Moving Panoramas, and literally hundreds more. That's howdidigethere.podbean.com. And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time. How did I get here? And now here is your host, I'm Johnny.
When we talk. All right. Hello, I'm Johnny. I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I have a fantastic show for you guys today. My dear friend, Taylor Wilkins from Otis the Destroyer, returns to the show today. They have a brand new album out. It's called Keep Bashing. It comes out this Friday, September 29th, and they're doing a record release show this Friday, September 29th at Hotel Vegas, presented by 101X with special guest Dr. Joe. Love Dr. Joe too, right? Anyway, this record was produced by Frenchie Smith, my dear friend, my old friend. This record is like, if you had to find a record that could single-handedly bring back rock and roll and say, hey, rock and roll is not dead. This record grabs rock and roll by the lapels and shakes it and says, hey, motherfucker, wake up. We got work to do. Taylor Wilkins and his band, Otis the Destroyer, their brand new album, Keep Bashing, comes out this Friday, September 29th. Get it. Taylor's had a great year so far this year. He's been putting out some singles as a solo artist in this project he calls Otis Wilkins. It's different than Otis the Destroyer. He's put out, he's made this EP, Strangest Place, and he's been releasing songs. And right now he's in Europe with Project ATX6, which he's been invited to be a part of this year. He talks all about it in the podcast. It's pretty totally amazing, guys. Get out to their SoundCloud page. You can hear some songs from Keep Bashing right now by Otis the Destroyer. Well, first listen to the podcast, and you'll hear some of the songs on here, and then you can go there and listen to them in their entirety and listen to them until Friday when you can get the album, Keep Bashing, produced by my dear friend Frenchie Smith. Taylor and I have a fantastic conversation, as we always do. He's one of my favorite people. I met him through the podcast. I met him and his girlfriend, Sarah Hauser, through the podcast, and it's been great. It's been great getting to know them. I wish that I hung out with them more outside of the podcast, but I guess if I keep on having them on every once in a while and having these long conversations, then I'm always keeping up with how they're doing, which makes me happy. Otis the Destroyer, Keep Bashing, comes out this Friday. Taylor and I have a fantastic conversation. It's coming up in just a minute. First, let me tell you what's going on with me. All right? I've been sick since Thursday. You heard it on the last show. I missed a day. I put out a podcast every Tuesday and every Friday. And this last week, I was sick, didn't feel well, went to put out a podcast, put out the wrong show, or put together the wrong show, and then started feeling terrible. And Friday, I was in bed all day. Saturday, I was in bed all day. I got up and put the podcast together and put it out. But otherwise, I got back in bed. Saw a lot of stuff on TV. Yeah, I saw that new Lady Gaga 5'2" documentary on Netflix. That's good. It makes you feel sad for her. It should be called like Lady Gaga. It's terrible to be famous. I cry whenever I'm alone. Every time she did something, then she'd cry afterwards. And, boob alert. She shows her boobs in this one scene in the movie. Spoiler alert also, by the way. If you haven't seen the movie, I'm going to blow your mind right now. Okay, so she's having this meeting with like a publicist and like a stylist, and she's talking about like, oh, I used to wear meat dresses, so what can I do now that's going to top what I've done? Well, I'll just wear jeans and a black t-shirt. And so she's being filmed the whole time, like from her shoulders up, and then all of a sudden she changes positions, and she's just topless having this meeting. She's like sitting outside in the sun with these people and just like having a conversation about what she's thinking about wearing for her next tour. And her boobs are just hanging out. And let me tell you something. Pretty much exactly what I thought Lady Gaga's boobs would look like. And I know that sounds weird, but maybe you had a pre-notion. Maybe they look like this. And then you see them and you're like, I thought they'd look like that. And that's what I said when I saw that. Anyway, look, it's worth watching. It's on Netflix. If you have Netflix, it's free. you got nothing to do, watch it. Watch Lady Gaga do her thing. I don't know if I can actually recommend it. I watch so many music documentaries. I should probably be doing a show about them. I can tell you some other ones I've seen, but I'm not going to get into that right now. Anyway, I did spend a lot of time in bed, and now I'm just waiting for my girlfriend to come over. Yep, that's true. I haven't really said that on the show, but I am going out with someone. She's very nice. She's a massage therapist, and she's very funny. She's very beautiful. She's very tall, and she's very smart. And I have a great time hanging out with her. And we're going to go down to Pecan Street Festival and walk around, see some bands, maybe Fragile Rock, maybe some other bands. I had a list of people I was going to go see. Anyway, that's what's going on with me. I'm not sick anymore, and I'm seeing someone who's really nice. So anyway, we're going to go down to Pecan Street Festival. Maybe I'll bring home some kettle corn. Maybe watch The Deuce tonight. Have you seen any good music documentaries lately? I like to see them all. I'd like to see one about Taylor Wilkins. Oh, in fact, I think those Project ATX6, I think they film a lot of their stuff, and they're in Europe right now. Taylor's over there right now as we speak. He's going to be in town just in time to play at his release show for their album, Keep Bashing, which comes out this Friday, September 29th, and they're playing a release show at Hotel Vegas Friday, September 29th, presented by 101X and featuring our pal, Dr. Joe. I know, I love Dr. Joe. This album's absolutely fantastic, and it does remind you that rock and roll is alive and well. And I want to thank Taylor and the rest of the band for doing that. They're great people. Taylor and I have a great conversation. I hope you have a great week, whatever it is you're doing. Here's my pal, Taylor Wilkins. Let's get down. Different guys with Otis Wilkins?
Mm-hmm. The only person that was the same was the bass player, Andrew.
Okay. And you're going to do that thing at ABGB. This is going to come out after that, but you're doing that thing this...
Yeah.
You're doing it with them?
Mm-hmm.
And is that the first time you're playing as that?
This will be technically the third time.
Okay. It's a Project ATX show, right?
Yeah.
And so you're part of that this year too, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what's going on with that? You guys are going to Europe? You're going to Germany?
Yeah, the first trip is...
Sorry, you were trying to drink your coffee.
No. The first trip is on the... We leave on the 18th of September, get back on the 28th, and we start in Hamburg at the Reeperbahn Festival.
Nice.
On the 20th, and then the next day we're at Joker's Pub in Angers. And then I don't know the rest of the itinerary because I figured at least I get the first 2 dates, right?
Right. But you guys go out, you do things for a whole year, right?
It's for the rest of the fall. Okay. There's this trip that in September, and then we're going to Tokyo in October.
Wow.
Which I'm very, very excited about. I'm excited about all of it, but Tokyo, I've never been to Tokyo.
Yeah.
Or Japan. And then the last trip is Toronto or Canada.
And so why is the Project ATX?
I guess it's to showcase six different artists who are, you know, fairly different, some similar, some more different, just showcasing and representing Austin.
Okay.
And so Chris Brech, who organizes it, I guess he, you know, reaches out and gets us showcases. And this is the third year, and it's, you don't take the band, but what eventually happens is that because
you make those relationships.
You make those relationships, but you also play with the people who you're going with.
Oh, okay.
So I'm going to play with Corey on some stuff, Corey Baum.
Oh, yeah, yeah. How cool.
Yeah.
And I'd love to go to Tokyo with Corey and you.
Oh, my gosh.
That'd be awesome.
It's going to be ridiculous. You should.
Come on. Fun.
I mean, if anyone should also be representing Austin.
Thanks.
Yeah.
So, Corey Baum, and who else is on it?
CC Berry, Lindsay, Mobley, and myself. How many is that? Six. And AC Moreno.
Okay.
AC. I'll butcher her last name. Only because now I'm nervous about saying it.
That's okay. I butcher people's last names, and I feel really bad about it. Yeah. But you know what? I have a last name that gets butchered all the time.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure.
Yeah.
Sympathy.
I have no problem with it.
Yeah.
So, Keep Bashing, which is the Otis and the Destroyer record.
Otis the Destroyer.
Sorry.
All the time. All the time. It happens with so many people.
The Otis the Destroyer record, Keep Bashing, unbelievable.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Full on rock and roll.
I would hope so.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was, you know, some of my favorite rock and roll records, Zeppelin 2, you know, I would never compare, but one of my things that I love about that record is just the how much ground it covers.
Yeah.
But it's still a rock and roll record.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to do something similar, and I felt pretty good about it, and the other guys do too. I think we achieved it.
You should. When I heard, where did I hear it? Was it like a 101X playlist or something?
Yeah.
Like a month and a half ago or something you were on, and I went and listened to it, and there was new songs by a few people that I knew. Man, but that thing just blew me away. I can't remember what song it was.
It would probably be Van Rossita.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
Yeah, it's and that has the dirtiest lyrics.
Yeah.
in the weirdest, most like uncontrived way. Yeah, it's funny about that song. One of my coworkers is named Kevin, and one of the lyrics is hey there, but Kevin, want to take me up to heaven and get you off.
Yeah.
And I showed him the song, and I'd done the vocal with Frenchie, and was like, he's like, oh, let's just keep it. It's great. It's fucking great. There's nothing wrong with it. And I was like, sure, why not? You know. And then I was listening to it later. I was like, I realized I had written a lyric about me sleeping with my coworker in a van.
There's also in that Houston song, there's like kissing dude stuff.
Yeah.
What's going on, Taylor?
I there's a lot of pretty men out there. A lot of beautiful men. No, I mean, I'm totally comfortable with my sexuality. I love my girlfriend, you know. But, you know, I've never understood why you would draw a line unless you wanted to for yourself, you know, and saying I'm only on this side of the line, I'm straight or I'm or whatever, you know. I sexuality to me is a spectrum, like most people I feel like these days see it as.
Right.
And so that was the content of the song was more just like I've seen beautiful men and I was like, you know, I've had a few drinks and thought I'd kiss that guy, you know.
Yeah.
Not now, right at this moment, but
right.
it has occurred to me in my life. So I
what's wrong? That coffee wasn't good enough.
It's so good. No, but you know, it's like I don't know. I feel attracted to people, you know, and like there's guys, girls, and everything in between, you know.
I don't think that's no. weird,
and that's why I put it in there because it didn't feel weird.
Yeah,
I would never put. On the Belushi EP, there's a lyric that says, "I don't want to fuck you in the dark," and I felt weird about that, and to this day, I wish I had changed it to love or something else, because that is not the way the phrasing I wanted it to come across. And a lot of people are like, oh, you know, fuck. And I'm like, nah, you know, I mean, I've fucked in my life, and I've had sex, and I've made love, and I've done all the things in between, but anyway, you know, I got off topic there for a second, but I guess the lyric, you know, The thing about this album that I felt really good about is a little bit more introspective about the lyrics. Sarah helped me write a lot of them, you know, and finish a lot of those ideas.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, on tons of stuff. On some of the dirtiest lines, too. And so I'm not dirty, but, like, on some of the most, you know, not PC lines, if so to speak. So she really liked the, you know, when I love the girls, when I kiss all the boys.
Yeah.
You know, she thought that was funny.
Yeah, it is funny.
It was like, you know. Anyway.
Anyway, so how does that work? So you have an idea and you write a song. Are you really, really prolific? Because, basically you have like a full album and an EP done.
Oh, yeah.
And they're you, but they're still different.
Hopefully.
They're unique itself. If someone played me one of them, I could tell you what it was from.
Yeah.
Pretty sure.
I think, I mean, the idea was to be different in the Otis Wilkins and the Otis the Destroyer projects, but it does allow me to be prolific in a sense that I can be like, well, if this is not definitely an Otis the Destroyer song, then it could be an Otis Wilkins song.
I don't know what the first song is on the Otis Wilkins, but it's the one about
If I die? Die
if you die, yeah. Which seems like lyrically a lot different.
Totally.
Than what's going on the Otis. And even your voice is you're singing prettier.
It is, the Otis Wilkins stuff is supposed to be a little bit more melodramatic and pretty.
Yeah.
Like, I tell him, in my mind, it's more Roy Orbison, like.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not crooning, you know, and I definitely don't have the vocals like he does, but it is supposed to emote the different, you know, more like thoughtful, introspective emotions out there.
Yeah.
Whereas Otis Destroyer is like, you know, let's chug a beer and hopefully, or whatever is your thing.
Yeah.
Drink a lot of coffee and go for a run.
How do you do the writing, like, for the Otis stuff? Do you guys jam stuff out?
Yeah. I mean, in my mind, you know, I'm working on the tunes at home and I'm like, this tune, I think, like, you know, hear it as like an Otis Destroyer song. I can hear how it could really work. And I'll bring it to the guys, and we'll just play it. And the first thing we figure out is the tempo.
Okay.
And then we play to that tempo, and we start recording it. And, you know, I obsessively listen to it. I send out all the demos to the guys, and they made me listen to it once or twice. But, you know, they're not gonna fall in love with the recording until I'm like, this is the one that everyone will try to emulate.
Oh, right. So, yeah.
You know, like, this feel right here is really great. So we just kind of like hack at it, and
but like, what all do you come in with? Like the chords
just,
and the
yeah, just
singing,
the chords and the singing,
the yeah lyrics yeah. and melody.
I mean, there's a, you know, maybe a bare bones drum beat in mind that I have, and you know, some of the production ideas for sure. But for the most part, I just see how the band reacts, and that's my favorite approach. Is like, get guys or girls or whoever your players are, and get people that you like the way that they play, and then throw a song at them and see what happens, instead of trying to shovel down a funnel.
Yeah.
And then you can start saying, look, I like the way you're playing this bass line, but maybe the drums need to have kind of this feel, or can we kind of work on it? And it's a totally collaborative effort. And anytime I'm making a suggestion to Clellan on the drums, he then makes it his drum beat thing.
Yeah.
And which I usually really like. He's not like, so exactly like this? You want the hi-hat like this? I'm like, no, you figure out all that minutia.
Right.
I just want it a little leaned back.
Right.
Whatever your version of that is, lean it back.
Yeah.
So.
It's interesting what leaning back and leaning forward can do. I just had a rehearsal last week where we were kind of going through a couple songs. Why does this feel like it's dragging? And it's like, oh, when you listen to the fucking record, it's like, oh, it's leaning forward, and that's such a fine thing.
Absolutely, and it could be a mood, but that's why I love that Clellan plays with a click. Eric, who plays drums in the Otis Wilkins stuff, he plays with a click.
Live?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's a good way to keep it, yeah.
To me, it's about consistency. There are some songs, like Van Reseda, for those Destroyer stuff, we don't play it with a click, because there is a tempo pull, and same with Houston-ish. So it's not that we have to live on the click. It's just there are certain songs that we don't want to be too fast, and when you're playing a rock and roll show and alcohol is flowing and the emotions are flowing and you're pumped up, you always want to play the faster songs faster, you know, the slow songs faster. So to curb that and to really keep it consistent, we, you know, Clellan was the one that got me on the click. It was his call. He was like, I'd rather play. Because we had a guy that was helping us manage, and he was like, oh, I don't think it's very rock and roll. And I was like, how about we handle what was considered rock and roll, and you help us keep our website updated?
And it's...
shit we really don't care about.
Right. There's like a... Some people adamantly do the opposite, like a James, like you listen to a James Brown record, then you listen to a James Brown live record, it's just like Jesus Christ. But that's what he wanted to do. Jackson 5 too, which is weird. Did you see that documentary about Off the Wall, the Michael Jackson
album? But I will.
It's real cool, but there's this drummer on there, my friend Brandon Temple is like, that's my guy. I'm like, that's your guy? That guy plays 10 times faster live than he does on the record. Like, I was astonished, but I guess that's also like a thing. Some people like, my friend David Garza is like that too. He plays everything live really fast.
I think it's whatever, you know, it's whatever you want to do. It's however you want to represent yourself.
Well, you can lose like a groove. Like,
totally.
What defines a song's slinkiness or sexiness, which rock and roll has, and you can kill it by leaning forward or making it go too fast.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it always will happen. You will always speed up with playing a more rocking set. The adrenaline will get the better of you.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, there are times when I've turned around and I've been like, are you sure this is the right tempo?
Yeah. He's on like, the click.
Click. Yeah. He's like.
Yeah. Yeah. I have that sometimes too. Like when you're amped up a little bit, you're like, why is everything so slow?
Yeah. Yeah. Why are people not just going crazy right now? Yeah. Yeah. But no, I think it's whatever you want to do. I think tempo is the most important thing. There are some songs that can live in a wider spectrum of tempos, like the Grateful Dead's "Friend of a Devil." Like I don't like the slow version that's live that a lot of times they recorded, but the album version is one of my favorites.
Yeah,
you know,
I don't know any of the live versions.
It's just like. I went down to Reno. And it's like, that. Whoa, no. No,
it has to move. Yeah. Are you a Grateful Dead guy?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. I mean, when I'm talking about tempo, talking about a band that, you know, was all over the place, but I felt, you know, by their own volition, but I feel like it's whatever you want to do and you can make it great.
Like a month or so ago, I found on YouTube, like a show, like a recent show with John Mayer.
Oh yeah.
And it's a whole show. Like they come on stage and they start playing. Did you see any of this?
I heard good and bad things.
Well, here's what's bad is like you and I come from like the world of rock and roll and there's a show and like there's, you come out and you do something.
Yeah.
These guys literally come out and like everyone, it's not even in the same key. They're just kind of like. Boom, 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 boom.
Oh, no.
Everyone just noodles. And then all of a sudden, some dude's like, and then they just fall into a song. And that was really great. But I was kind of like, it gets so noodly that it kind of like, all that kind of like, whatever the people love about Jerry Garcia,
yeah.
I don't dislike it. I just don't understand why people freak so hard, because it does sound real noodly. If you're not in that mindset, you know what I mean.
Either musically or drug induced or both. Yeah. I think the thing that personally what I loved about Jerry Garcia as a guitar player myself is his just the inventiveness of some of his lines. But he. You know, like some artists, he just put everything out there, and or they were totally cool with people recording their stuff and having it. And I think it's because people's lenses are a lot sharper these days. You know, they really criticize an artist if the song is bad versus they just want to have a whole set of Grateful Dead tapes back in the day so they can listen to a different version of Fire on the Mountain, you know, from the night before when they didn't hit the LSD 2 hours before, but an hour before. So it really kicks in during the court. You know, like there's all these little things that can make those performances so fun to listen to, but you know, you're digging through mountains and days and hours of material, but in all that, there's so many great moments with Jerry Garcia playing wonderful stuff. And I think those are the moments that most of the people hopefully are looking for, or I looked for. Mm-hmm. Like there are certain recordings that I'll just listen to a minute and a half of him going off, because that night during that minute and a half, it was amazing.
Yeah.
And I'm sure like from your, you know, from all your days of playing, if you could have the best of the best of your moments where, you know, you remember that, I'll remember that night. Everything's just felt wonderful.
Yeah.
If I had a recording of that, you know, God, I could just, you know, that's the good thing about the Grateful Dead's approach to all that was they were just like, let's let everybody record everything and then it'll eventually be out there.
Yeah. I love that. And I love their community.
Yeah. Like, for better or worse,
that whole thing
great.
Is just amazing. And it's hard to believe that never really took off like it did with them with other bands. I know Pearl Jam has like a pretty intense sort of like communal fan base.
I think it was because they, you know, they had such ties to the cultural changes, you know, and they were like so, you know, as much as they weren't mainstream, they're very mainstream.
Yeah.
I read a autobiography about Jerry Garcia, and it was talking about how before like the mid 90s he wasn't idolized in the Grateful Dead scene. It was more like the whole band was. It wasn't that Jerry Garcia was the prophetic figure above the rest. It was like, it was what happened when merch started happening.
Oh, really?
And they became a mainstream thing. Yeah, and it wasn't that the band felt... They felt like any human would. You know, they felt good and bad about it, right? Cool, it's good for the band because we get to, you know, succeed a little bit more. But also it's bad because they know that they did all this stuff together, very communal-like, and to have one of their figures raise up when he was instrumental in a lot of the things that made the band great. But obviously him alone wasn't what sold the Grateful Dead.
Right.
Obviously it's not anymore, right? Because they pull, I mean, you can't...
It's the idea now is bigger than the individuals.
Yeah.
By far. Because you could put John Mayer out with a bunch of new guys and be like, this is a Grateful Dead now.
And it'd probably be better.
Yeah.
Honestly, if they were to go back and do most of the recordings like the way that they were, it'd be amazing.
Yeah.
But then that wouldn't be very Grateful Dead-ish.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't find any of that in your music at all.
No.
That does not permeate your jams in any way.
No, it doesn't. I mean, I call it the Queen approach, but, you know, every space and moment has a purpose, and it should have the same purpose.
There's like too much, I don't know, are you Cheap Trick guy?
You know, what's funny is I should be, but I have never...
Yeah, because you seem like a band that could, like, tour with them, opening for them.
Love to.
And make the audience really happy. To know that someone now is doing a kind, like, the kind of, like, rock and roll that you can also sing along to. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And not in, like, a, you know, I don't want to knock the Foo Fighters because I would love to go on tour with them. But, you know, Dave Grohl has done an amazing thing with that band. But I am more interested in bands like Cage the Elephant.
Yep.
Who write... more creative or produce their songs in a creative way that is a little different than you know what a stereotypical Foo Fighters song sounds like,
right?
But I like that main I like pop, you know, in the rock.
Yeah,
I like a good melody, you know. Now I used to shy away from it, but now I just follow it.
What do you listen to?
Oh man, recently I've been. It's like every time someone dies, I start listening to him. And so lately, it has been God, what's his
Walter Brecker?
No,
Glenn Campbell. A lot of people.
Glenn
have died.
Campbell. Yeah.
Oh really?
Yeah. Everybody is talking to me. You know, hey, he did that.
That's Harry Nilsson.
Yeah, but,
He did it.
He did a version of it
okay.
for a Sonny Bono intro.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it was amazing.
Oh, wow.
I'm pretty sure it was him. I mean, it said Glenn Campbell.
Okay.
Either somebody mislabeled the YouTube video. I mean, he had the same big head. Blockhead. Not to speak
ill
of the dead.
He did have a very unique... Yeah. His career was pretty unbelievable.
Oh, I mean, and then I went, you go down the YouTube hole, and I was just watching all the live videos of him, and
well, he was also like a session guy.
He's incredible.
Like he's on Pet Sounds.
Yeah.
He's part of the Wrecking Crew.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah. He was part of that whole group, that's how he got in. He moved to L.A., and he was a badass guitar player, and he met up with those dudes that just went from studio to studio all day long playing on records.
Yeah.
It's funny because, oh man, what's the song? I can't remember the fucking Beach Boys song, but we were learning a Beach Boys song, and I had seen that, the Wrecking Crew movie.
Yeah.
And we were working on the Beach Boys song, and like you can get those Beach Boys isolated, you know, just the music tracks and stuff. I was listening to the music track, and I was like, guys, could someone look up the Munsters? Because I knew that all those guys played on all those theme songs, too, and it was the exact... It was like they did it on the same day with the exact same dudes and mic'd everything the same way. Like, the Munsters theme song sounds exactly like... God, what is the Beach Boys song? It's really famous. Not Be True to Your School, but something like that. There's like a bum bum bam bum bum bum. It's like they just, hey, we got to do the Munsters theme. All right, go back to the Beach Boys now. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, those I love those dudes.
Yeah,
those session dudes from the '60s and '70s.
Go ahead.
Do you ever do that? Do people ask you to play on their stuff?
I mean, sometimes I think, but not very often. I mean, I think as a lead guy in the band, you know, it's always seen like maybe I wouldn't be very adaptive, but
right.
I played guitar in Slow Mo Drags for a little over a year, I want to say.
Oh, really?
And that was an incredible experience because Jackson's a phenomenal guitar player and great arranger and way more complicated than I would ever get. But it's like staring into the abyss of what could be with him. So anyway, long story short, becoming like sort of a session player, because I told him, I was like, I mean, it was down to the what pedal was on, what tone, everything. So it was very like structured. I loved that as a player because I could just show up to the gig and know exactly what to expect on my end. But I think, you know, showing up to a gig and being like, I feel really good tonight. I'm going to really improvise on this last jam session that we have is also a good way of having a night. You know, it's just... I mean, and we do that with Otis. I mean, there are moments in our set when if I look back, I have like, we have enabled jam sessions, sections of songs where it's like, I'm feeling it. Let's keep going. But for the most part, I like to play the same rock and roll set every night. Some people look really down on that. They're like, different set every night. And that's like, there's a Frank Zappa interview where he says notoriously, he's like a written guitar soloist. He's like, I'm not a monkey. Like, I'm fine with being a monkey.
Yeah, there's, I mean, those things become, and I mean, that's the thing is, like, we were in a different style of music than Frank.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, what's expected of Frank, like, someone's going to want to sing along with your guitar solo when it comes to it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But not Frank's, they don't even know. They want to hit him to do something that's going to freak them out.
Which is totally awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, different mindsets.
Yeah.
Do you, are you a Frank Zappa fan?
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
My old manager at my workplace was, he came and saw the band that I was playing at the time, and he was like, man, you really need to get into Clutch and Frank Zappa. And so it was like two totally different bands, but I was like, sure. And he gave me a couple of records. It was good. I'll burn CDs, and they were all mislabeled. So like my knowledge of like what songs are called is totally wrong.
Yeah.
But I could totally tell you what song is playing if I'd be like, oh, this is definitely Clutch, and that one record with that other song is right after this one. It's got the piano, you know. So,
Frank Zappa is a lot. Mm. That's a lot. That's a weird. That's a beyond sort of like, isn't it weird? He's like, how do you think like that? You know what I mean? When you listen to his music, it's like.
By being sober and drinking coffee.
Yeah, I guess so. And it sounds like he did a lot of drugs. Like, because it's so weird. Because he's so weird.
He is so weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I always feel like he just had the... You know, there's a lot of creative, prolific people out in the world who think very weirdly. And it's just they don't have some way. Frank figured out a way to record a bunch and get it out to people. You know, it's like... I'm sure that there's a million, not a million Frank Zappas out there, but I'm sure there's a lot of creative people that the only reason we don't hear about them is just sheer numbers and means.
Yeah.
You know, like he to be able to be Frank Zappa and to be as popular with his music being essentially inaccessible to a lot of people is phenomenal. Like it's the wonderful thing about music. It's the same thing with like Tom Waits. It's like most people. It's like, do you really listen to Tom Waits, or you like Tom Waits?
Yeah,
because there's a difference.
It's true. I like him.
I like him. Yeah. I don't necessarily actually listen to him. Like, no. Hard Rain, I think, is cool. And there's some phenomenal tunes, but I couldn't sit through 12 songs of it.
No, there have been records that have come out that I've gotten into, like Bone Machine.
Oh yeah,
and some other record. That were like, I would listen, but I know what you mean. Otherwise, you listen to a couple songs, or you go and listen to a song you want to hear and go move on to the next thing.
And that's the wonderful, you know, aspect about being on the, you know, Spotify and switch songs and listen to all that stuff. It's got its negative aspects, you know. It takes away the album feel sometimes.
It's interesting because you made an album, And is there at any point while you were making that album where you're like, why am I doing a whole album? I mean, I'm glad you did.
Because paying for press for 12 singles is a lot more, I guess.
You're right.
No, but honestly, it's just to... because we hadn't... I felt like the first two EPs we did were great, but they were, you know, they were experiments into different sounds. And this album is what I would consider the bedrock. So if you want to know what Otis the Destroyer sounds like, sure, you can listen to those two other EPs, but what you really should do is listen to this record. This is what we sound like.
Yeah.
And the only way you can, you know, reestablish that, you know, that base of songs is by putting out a record, I feel like. Just saying, this is us. So people will listen to the first record, and then maybe they'll get into the EPs, but... I felt like it was necessary just to reassert ourselves. Or yeah. To assert ourselves, yeah. Maybe. Not reassert, but... Yeah,
when I was talking to my friend Scrappy about recording, he was like, "Oh, we got to do an album," and I was like, "I'm not gonna do a whole album."
I wouldn't.
I mean, I just don't want to.
Otis probably will not do another full album for a while because it doesn't fit with being a prolific songwriter. Because there's so much weight. I mean, this album's been done for 7 months almost, and Jesus. The only reason we put it out is because we were done, quote unquote, shopping around. You know, it was more like. Why wait, you know?
You're shopping it to labels and people like that?
Yeah, we did a handful. And at the end of the day, I just realized that, like, as beneficial as it can be, of course, but it's not going to be the answer. Like, what if we had shopped it and then thought that more was going to happen?
Right.
And then it didn't.
Yeah.
Then it's more depressing than just putting out a record and hoping the best and pushing it as best as you can. But like my brain did like a 180 about a year ago, and it was like, I'm not going to try to conquer the world anymore. I'm just going to put out really great rock and roll records in Austin, Texas and see what happens, you know, yeah. And do the best I can to continue to make contacts and go. But as far as touring and trying to push the record past a certain point, it's a life killer. You know, and I'm 31, hopefully about to get
married.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't know if I should say that, because is this going to come out before the 18th?
No.
Okay. All right. But yeah, anyway, I just decided that I wanted to put out more music all the time. And the best way to do that is, you know, just to keep recording and stop worrying about trying to... You know, because you could spend $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, $8,000, $9,000, $10,000 on press, and it could really blow your record up, or it could not.
But the thing is like when you do that, then how do you get to the places that are react? You know what I mean? I guess it's different than radio. You know, like
we are doing a radio campaign, for the first time actually this time.
Like a college radio campaign, or is there alternative rock radio anymore? Is there 101Xs everywhere still?
There are some. I think it just depends on the market. Like, there's a 94.5 The Buzz in Houston.
Right. The Buzz.
Oh, yeah.
Buzzfest.
Buzzfest.
With Thrice.
Oh, yeah. And Breaking Benjamin. Yeah, I mean, I think that there are some... College radio is going to be a big part of it. Sure, yeah, absolutely. It's this guy named Shil Patel out of Athens, Georgia, my hometown, actually, which is so awesome. I think I'll actually get to meet him this fall, but... Yeah, we're going to do a radio campaign. So that's my new thing is like instead of paying for PR, which I mean, I think a blog post and Pitchfork about your band being cool is great.
But also you'd think that once you've done the press rounds a couple of times with the publicist, then maybe you could come around the third time and you don't need to introduce yourself.
Exactly.
Hopefully.
And we haven't done the press run with Otis that we should. It's just about means. And it's like, would I rather spend $3,000 on a decent... okay publicist to push us to local better blogs and then paste and all that crap, or do I want to spend half that and do a radio campaign? Try a radio campaign. That's what I was thinking. And you know, at least you know people are listening to your music. I mean, we've already gotten picked up on a few stations. I don't have it memorized. You just sent me the email update, but it seems like people are responding, or at least the local DJs, a few of them have already been like, yeah, we really like the record, we'll spin it.
Mm-hmm.
So
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's better to me. It's more. It means more than a post. I don't remember all the press the couch or Otis got in the first year or whatever. I mean, I appreciate it all, but
yeah,
it doesn't mean anything now.
Right. Right.
But I don't know. Maybe somebody will listen to the song and be like, oh, shit, I'm going to go find these guys on Spotify.
Yeah.
And then we have a new follower.
Right.
That's more immediate.
Totally.
I've never followed a band after reading about them. I've read about bands that I know.
Yeah. You know, I think I come from a time when you read about something and went out and bought it. Like, that's a very big...
I hope so.
I can name a bunch of bands that I read something about and... what they said was exactly what I wanted in my tape player.
But you read it from a source that you respected.
Yes.
And it's not to say that there are writers that I don't respect, but there is no great rock and roll writers that I know that I would be like, oh man, if this guy said that I should go listen to this record, I'd go listen to it.
Right.
Just because it's, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't feel that.
Do they play you on 101X? They're sponsoring your show.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, I think we're actually being played on all the local radio. KGSR, I think, is playing us.
Oh, good.
101X, KUTX, because we're doing their taping tomorrow night.
Awesome.
Yeah.
The guy that is the program director of 101X, Lynn Barstow.
Yeah.
When I was out with radio promotion, promoting a record of mine, he was a guy in Tulsa, on like the alternative station there. And he was real nice and took... me and our guitar player to dinner. I think he felt sorry for us because we had to do this thing where you just went to every radio station that would take you and walk in with your acoustic guitar, and they would be like, there's free pizza in the conference room and a band is going to play. And so our label would buy pizza, and then like people would come in and just be like, and then you'd have to play your two songs acoustic and try and be as charming as possible and hope that they would play your song. And we had been doing it. We were going to like two or three cities a day. It was pretty rough. It was humiliating.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's like selling yourself, literally.
But I mean, that's, you know,
it's part of the gig. It is part of the gig.
But yeah, that guy, Lynn, and we've always stayed friends.
That's awesome.
And just from that one day, just that night, like I think he just saw it in our eyes, and we were so grateful to him. Like, are you going to take us somewhere and feed us? He's like, yeah, man, let's go somewhere and let's hang out.
Yeah.
And we were like, fuck yeah, we don't have to suck your dick or anything.
I don't got to tell you.
No, I'm cool. So what happens, like, if this is what I was going to lead to, was one of the things that I found strange at that time was it was very difficult when a station picks up your song and adds it to rotation. What you're saying is you're just hoping that you'll get followers out of it and people will go and listen to the music, as opposed to we need to get to that town because they're spinning our jams. And then you end up getting there 6 weeks after they stop spinning the jam and there's like three fat girls that remember you. And you know what I mean? Like, that's it.
Yeah.
Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, actually, Ohio is one of the places that, funny enough, yeah. I think with the internet these days, though, it's right, it's easier to connect to the band, like if you hear them on the radio. Whereas you're talking about, like...
I'm talking about back then.
If you're doing a radio campaign in on top of a tour.
Right.
Right, and a radio campaign is supposed to preempt the tour, right?
Right. But what happens is, on a radio campaign that's just national, you could be on a 3-week run of the East Coast when you should be on the West Coast, because that's where they're spinning your jams. And
I mean, and that's the luck of the draw.
Yeah.
I mean, that it, yeah.
But you guys do tour regionally, right? Do you play like
Houston? I mean, we do. I mean, we do tour regionally. We do Houston, Dallas, San Antonio, Fort Worth. We do Tulsa a bunch, Corpus, you know, a lot of stuff in the Valley.
Where do you play in Corpus? Executive Surf Club?
House Rock.
Oh, yeah, okay. That's a new place since I've been there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But my goal is to not kill ourselves, you know, and to continue to put out great records and tour regionally in Texas and hope that, you know, we can create a strong following and then continue outward. But why does it make sense for Otis Destroyer to travel to New York unless there's somebody that we're trying to meet and play in front of, but all the space in between? It doesn't.
Oh, dude, trust me. Yeah.
I mean, it just, and it, not anymore, right? And like, it, I get that you're supposed to give it all to the rock thing or the music thing. But it doesn't make sense to be miserable. And it doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense to put yourself in a position where you're playing to three people a night.
Yes.
All over the place, not making any money. Your band is slowly breaking up, no matter what. No matter what you think.
Yeah.
When you are out there broke, living in a van.
It's only a matter of time.
It's only a matter of time. You guys, you get tired. There's nothing.
There's no carrot.
There's no, yeah, it can be really, really bad. It slowly kills your band. And then also, I mean, why go, yeah, my thing is like, why go to places when they don't want you to yet?
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
I mean, longevity, I think to me has been the most constant characteristic of most of the bands that I love, like The National, The Walkmen, this guy Langhorne Slim, who I really love, Spoon. Mm-hmm. Like, the way you make it work, and those guys have all, you know, given it 110% 10 times over and taken serious risks, more than I have ever taken, but they've also, I feel like, just been constant. And they put out good records. Yep. And they, you know, they tour when it's smart, they tour when they can, and they just continue to grow. It's these bands that have all this heart and passion. They're like, oh man, we're so sick of playing the same place every week. And it's like, you should be, but you should not be traveling 5,000 miles away to play for nobody.
Right.
Yet. Go 100 miles.
Yeah.
Or 200 miles.
Yeah. I mean, it does affect
it
affects your life too. Like, you know, if you have a loved one,
yeah,
it's going to be tough to keep that going.
Yeah.
After a while. Okay, so
sorry. Yeah.
Did you play Pennyfest?
Yeah.
So see, you played Pennyfest, you played that
The Ham Benefit with October Project or Octopus Project.
Yeah.
Robert Ellis.
Yeah.
Walker, yeah. And then we're playing with Andrew WK.
I saw that
one. That's what you get for sending emails in your underwear at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Who'd you send it to, Andrew?
No, Austin Bailey.
It'd be funny the way that I said that. You'd be like, wait a minute, you guys friends? That would be so great. No. I've heard him on a podcast, though, and I feel like I know him after that. I felt like he was my best friend.
He seems like a very nice person.
He's a really interesting, he's a smart dude.
Oh, I'm sure.
He's a motivational speaker more than a rock star.
Yeah.
Like, that's more of what he does, according to him.
I believe it.
So you emailed Austin?
Yeah. Oh yeah, and we just, you know, they happen to have a, you know, a support slot open, and you know, it was great. But yeah, I mean we're still planning on being prolific and still playing a lot of good shows. It's just more tactical about it.
Right, but these are also great shows. The Penny Fest and that benefit for Houston, you probably got up in front of a lot of people that had never seen you before and blew their minds.
I would hope so.
Yeah.
There was definitely a lot of people.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the band is as tight as it's ever been. I mean, we're not even practicing before the release show. And that is somebody from who likes to practice Tuesdays and Thursdays for the last 5 years.
Yeah.
You know, we're taking this trip to Europe. I'm getting back on the 28th, and our show is the 29th. And then we're playing a private event the next day for Black Fret.
Oh, really? So, do you guys win a Black Fret grant?
Trying to.
Okay.
Are
you nominated this year?
Not this year.
Okay.
Trying to get nominated for next year, I think.
That just happens.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, I became good friends with, you know, Kurt and some of the people involved. And, you know, I've worked with Tim Palmer now and Chris Smith or Frenchie Smith, you know, and they're both part of Black Fret. So I think I have a lot of good connections, but I just didn't want to force it, you know? I mean, I'm going to make the connections to these people, and you know, if I get along with someone, great. If not, I'm not going to bend down, and I'm not going to oversell Otis the Destroyer. Yeah. And it seems like a lot of people have just gravitated naturally, and a lot of the relationships that I've developed, like with Colin too, have been really great. They're fantastic guys.
They are fantastic guys.
I mean, they're so nice.
Tell me about working with Tim. I love that guy.
God, he's awesome. You know, he's I think everything he says, because he has that accent, the British accent, it's just fucking. He's like, yeah, see that guitar part? Yeah, it's, you know, you have a little bit there, and he goes, chick, chick. And I just like, we communicated a lot through the WhatsApp.
Uh-huh.
And so he would do voice recordings of his you know, his feedback or whatnot. And I have them all, and I'm going to keep them for the rest of my life. But yeah. He's great. Anyway, so as far as the musical experience goes, he was really, really great with me, because he basically was like, just send me the tunes and let's see what happens. You know, he would come in, and he had out of the five that he chose, I had four of those. Okay. So we only didn't agree on one song. He was like, obviously it's your song, so we'll choose the one you want. And then he ended up liking the song, Strangest Place.
Okay, good.
Which is my favorite, which is funny. And such a funny intro to the project, because it was like, we immediately just had this disagreement on something. And I was like, look, this is my favorite song. He's like, oh, just, you know, no offense, I'm just not hearing it. And like, then we record it, and he's like, it's a pretty good tune.
Yeah. So he mixed it?
Mixed it and produced it, yeah.
And produced it, okay.
He did a lot of extra guitar stuff. Like on It's Your Lips, he did a guitar line that follows the chorus vocal, and then a couple of almost like tremolo effects where it's like pop, 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 like pulsing of the guitar. That was just like, how do you think of that? Like,
That's why he's the guy.
He's so good, yeah, but... Yeah. It was the first time that I had ever mixed with someone where I wasn't in the room, at least with, you know, towards the end. Where, you know, it's obviously like, give them a chance to mix a song, how they'd mix it, and I'd come in and give the changes. And that's how this worked, but the changes were very small. It was like, can you just turn up the tambourine?
Yeah.
Huh. And that was it for some of them. He was phenomenal, though.
He's a cool guy, man.
He's a really cool guy, and he's really great about... He's just like, yeah, let's do that again, you know, and just no pretense about it.
I did my favorite, he was on the show, and my favorite story that he told me was that he was one of the people, one of the producers brought in for Chinese Democracy.
Yeah.
The whatever, and like Axl didn't come in for days, and I guess like after a week he just texted Axl and was like, hey man, like you coming in? And Dax was like, fuck you, you're fired, with his response.
Really?
Yeah. it's so insane.
It's, how dare you,
it's funny
reach out
when
to
you
me.
Think about like the people that dude's worked with on the level that he was working with you, like with Ozzy and like,
oh my
Robert
God.
Plant and fucking Bowie and like,
yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, whoa. You would know it if, you know, because he tells all the stories super organically, and it's always fucking hilarious. Like he's talking about this Linkin Park tune they had to mix, and that the guy who was the representative for the band was sitting right next to him the whole time he was mixing, making sure that he wasn't transferring the files to his computer, so that he wouldn't take it,
right,
and wouldn't be leaked,
right,
and so, you know. He's like, you know, it was fine. And then apparently, just out of the blue, some repairman came to Tim's house and was like knocking on the door. And the guy freaks out on him and is like, who is this? You didn't tell me this guy's coming by. Like, what the fuck's going on, man? And then Tim's like, oh, man, calm down, man. And he like goes outside and has to get the delivery guy to sign a thing saying that he's not going to release this Linkin Park track.
Jesus. Oh,
and making sure that he didn't hear any of the mixes or any of the songs. And it was just like, good God, no one cares that much. Maybe they do.
Yeah, I guess so. But is that the guy that died recently?
Chester.
Chester.
Yeah, it wasn't him. It was just a representative of the band. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's tragic.
Yeah, I really don't know anything about that band. I'm dating a girl now.
Mm-hmm.
And she's a massage therapist, and she does the backstage rock star massages at the festivals.
Oh.
And so she always has like a, oh yeah. I wanted to come on the show and do a thing where it's a one word answer where I just I say a rock star's name, and then she tells me what their body feels like. lumpy. You know what I mean? Something like that. But she said that he was a very nice guy.
I think, you know, they all seemed like really genuinely nice guys, just stoked to have made it.
Yeah. I don't know their music at all.
You know, I only know it because of the bombardment by the radio stations in Houston, you know, specifically 94.5 The Buzz. But yeah, I couldn't get away from it when I was growing up. I worked in Hollister, which is a offshoot of Abercrombie and Fitch.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And they had this touchscreen radio, and so customers could come in and put on songs.
Oh, okay.
But the queue was like 5,000 songs. So, you know, sometimes you wouldn't hear a song for days if you played it. And then sometimes people would press the same song. So there was a few instances where
it was just
Linkin Park all day.
Yeah.
The same song for 4 hours one time. And you think about how long it must have taken to press that button. Anyway, but yeah, and
So I've heard him. You'll be in Germany when this comes out in Europe.
No. When this comes out. Sorry.
Yeah. You'll be back the day the record comes out.
Yeah.
Just in time.
Hopefully.
Are you and you're playing a festival out there with all those guys, and then you're doing another. So it's just two shows with the.
It's three or four Project shows. Project 88 6. Yeah, it's at least four shows.
Okay. Just two that you knew of.
Just two that I knew.
Sarah gets to go too, right?
She does. That was for her 30th birthday. I bought her a plane ticket to go.
Right, and something else. What was the other thing?
Oh yeah.
You kind of blew the curve for a lot of dudes, I think, when she told. It was something else, too.
Yeah?
Yeah. What did you do? It was two things.
Man. I don't think so. I don't know. I mean, I think just the plane ticket.
Mm. No, you did something. It might have just been emotional.
The dog, the guitar, studio days.
I mean, what else? Jesus, dude. You're like the best boyfriend in the world.
She's the best girlfriend in the world.
Yeah.
When is this coming out?
This is coming out Tuesday before the 29th.
Okay. So she'll probably... I'm going to ask her to marry me while I'm over there.
That's so awesome.
Yeah. So I can say that now because
this will come out afterwards.
Yeah. But the last show's on the 23rd for the ATX6 thing. I'm meeting her up in Frankfurt the next day, and then we've got 4 days over there. I don't think she knows, but she was freaking out the other day because she couldn't find her passport and started tearing the house apart, and I'd hidden the ring right in front of her. In the TV, like next to the TV, and saw all my games and stuff, where she would never go.
Yeah.
But she's like, hey, I pulled out all your game stuff because I think maybe when you clean the house, you might have put it in there. And I was like, told my boss at my work, I was like, hey, I got to go home right now and make sure he doesn't find that. Like, otherwise, you know, I've spent how much money, like, getting all this ready to go. But, yeah. So either she's really good at lying, and because she had the box with the ring in it. Like, it was in a box of another box, right?
Yeah.
And she's, like, holding it when I got home, and she didn't seem weird. But I was like, let me have that box.
Yeah.
And I'll put it down right over here, and passport's right over here. Her passport, anyway.
Yeah. Lucky.
I'm really lucky. Super excited. A lot of good things happen.
Yeah, you're both really great people. If you do have room on the list for your wedding, I would be a happy person at your wedding.
Oh,
I would be a happy person to see you guys get married.
I would love to have you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Is there anything I'm missing? Always great to talk to you and see you.
No, I think that's all.
Okay. Everything's happening. Keep Bashing comes out Friday, September 29th. Record release show Friday, September 29th at Hotel Vegas, presented by 101X Homegrown, with special guest Dr. Joe.
Yeah.
I like that guy.
I love him.
Yeah, he'll show up a piano anywhere.
He is become one of my good friends.
Really?
I love that man.
Yeah, I like that guy a lot.
Yeah, thanks to Chris. Frenchie. Frenchie, yeah.
You call him Chris or Frenchie?
I'm feeling like
calling him Chris.
Excuse me. I don't know why I've called him Chris twice. I call him Frenchie.
Yeah, me too. Even though I met him as Chris. You all right, man?
Yeah, I think so.
All right. Thanks for coming by. Have fun.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
All right. Taylor Wilkins, congratulations, my friend, on getting engaged this weekend in Germany. Sarah Hauser from Lowen and Taylor Wilkins from Otis the Destroyer got engaged this weekend in Germany. So there you go. Congratulations to you two. I can't think of two nicer people to be together. You know what's really funny is their relationship came to light after they were on the show. They were on the couch. Like the first year I had this show, they were both in a band called The Couch. And they both came on the show as the representatives of the band. And during the conversation, I just point blank asked them, are you guys a couple? And they were like, no. But it turns out they were, but they hadn't cleared it with HR, and they needed to. And so now here they are engaged. So congratulations, Sarah and Taylor. Otis the Destroyer's brand new album, Keep Bashing, comes out this Friday, September 29th. The record release show is Friday, September 29th, at Hotel Vegas, presented by 101X Homegrown and featuring special guest Dr. Joe. Don't forget to check out Otis Wilkins, Strangest Place, great stuff. And Taylor is out there playing with Project ATX6 right now in Germany. He'll be back just in time for his show on Friday, September 29th. That's this Friday at Hotel Vegas. All right, let's hear Van Rosita from the album Keep Bashing by Otis the Destroyer. Congratulations again to Taylor and Sarah, and congratulations to Taylor on all this great stuff that's going on. Yeah, doing great, buddy. Let's get down.